All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 267 of the 9 Years podcast with myself, Nick Draper, and the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. And thank you very much for downloading the show this week. We are going to be looking back over what was a successful week on the pitch with 4 points from six from two difficult games, looking ahead to the visit of Wigan on Saturday. And then we're going to be looking back to a very, very momentous, I'm not sure that's a phrase, week 20 years ago this week in the history of Wimbledon FC / AFC Wimbledon. We have the FA Cup draw to discuss as well. Should we just knock that one out of the way first, you actually? Let's get the FA Cup draw out of the way first. Guiseley at home in the first round. Non-league team at home. I love the FA Cup. I do love the FA Cup for ties like this. Yes, you kind of always want an away tie at a non-league team if you're going to have one, because it's a nice away day. It's a nice different experience. But home game's just as good. Brings back memories for me from about 20-odd years ago when Fulham were drawn at home in the first round to Lee RMI, who managed to get a draw and get a replay. So these things, you know, you can never take anything for granted. Be it home or away, non-league teams in the FA Cup will always cause you problems. But we're quite happy with that, aren't we? I don't think the thing is, first round draw, now that we're in League One and all the big clubs in League One, like Sheffield Wednesday, Sunderland, Ipswich, all these teams, there's no draw that you really sort of think, oh, that would be great if we got them at home. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of wanting to get into the third round when you start to think of Championship Premier League clubs.
Yeah, I always think you just want, in the first round, I personally want a home draw. And the worst team in the tournament, the lowest ranked team in the competition, because realistically, you don't, you know, you want to make money. So yeah, all right, you can pick up the dreaded away draw and maybe get a TV and get TV. But that's the only way you're making the money, is by getting to the third round and getting a good home draw, good away draw, or get a game that obviously is a giant kill and the TV's involved. Like I think Sheffield Wednesday got Plymouth, didn't they? Which is a great, really good one. But ours is, straightforward. Interestingly, Brackley Town, they're both in the Conference North. Brackley are second, Guiseley are 17th. So actually, we've got the weaker of the two teams. And as I do, because I'm quite sad in stats, you know, moving stats. I did the road to Plough Lane. You know, not road to Wembley, road to Plough Lane, because it's a mess. Obviously, Plough Lane is the Wembley of the South. Is that right? You can't say it, can you? Wembley of the North, I don't know.
The Wembley of South London.
Yeah, but that's it. Wembley of South London.
I feel like I must point out at this juncture that the road to Plough Lane is essentially standstill traffic and lots of potholes and water and puddles and narrow paths. But anyway, go on.
But do you know what? I did look at how they reached Plough Lane. And do you know what? Interestingly, one giant of non-league and one giant of a team. So in the second qualifying round, Guiseley beat Colne.
Wow.
1-0. We all remember Colne, don't we, in the FA. Is it FA Vars or Trophy?
Vars.
Vars, wasn't it? When they basically, every player was 6'5", wasn't it? And Northern.
Yeah. Great day, though.
Yeah. And in the third qualifying round, they beat Blyth Spartans, which is interesting when you look at their road to Plough Lane. But I'm looking forward to it. It'll be interesting to see what attendance we get, because at King's Meadow, we're probably looking at 2,000, if that.
Yeah.
But I'm quite confident we're going to hit 4,000 or 5,000 for the FA Cup game. But yeah, it's a good draw. We don't know if it's Saturday or Sunday yet. It's not a live game. I reckon it might be on there. I think they're still doing their Sunday live score thing, don't they, on BBC?
Yeah, and I hope not.
I've got a feeling it might be on that. But, you know, yeah, decent draw.
I looked to see live television picks, BBC and ITV sharing the coverage this year. So it's all on terrestrial TV, although some games on ITV4, I don't know if that counts as terrestrial now. Who knows? It's on Freeview. But six live games just seems a bit excessive to me. And I really hope that Sunday thing isn't still happening, because I hate that so much. It's just needlessly pushing games onto a Sunday at 2 o'clock. Yeah. Just give us a Saturday 3 p.m, please, and I'll be very happy.
Yeah, definitely. I looked at the games. You know, there's some decent enough games, actually. Some decent draws this time around. I think Dagenham, Salford, I think, was one.
Yeah.
Dagenham are doing well in the conference this year.
Mm-hmm.
And St Albans, who conquered Corinthian Casuals. So obviously, we've got two loanies there, haven't we? Mm-hmm. And they've got a home draw against Forest Green. Not a bad draw. And you're right. We shouldn't take it for granted that we're going to steamroll this team. But hopefully we do it in one game and we don't want to replay. We don't want any more games at the moment.
No, certainly not. Do you remember you mentioned about attendances at King's Meadow and what we'd likely get if we were still there? The mystery that has never been solved for me is when we got to the second round for the first time and we had Stevenage. And we were non-league at the time and they were in the Football League at the time and we got like something like 3,200. I know Stevenage isn't a great draw, but it's the first time we were in the second round. Prize of a third round tie on offer. And we only got... I just thought that was odd, but hey.
Was that a live game? Where we
ITV put it on TV. Yeah, they did, yeah.
That's right. I think the thing with King's Meadow is that, like I say, unless you had a ticket, a seat in the stand or you were 6'5".
Yeah.
You didn't really get a good view, did you? That's why I think we get a really good attendance and I know obviously it's not a competition that we want to play in, but the Football League Trophy game attracted 4,000, didn't it, for Pompey? So, and there was a lot of newer fans, if that makes any sense. But I think we'll hit 4,000-5,000 easily.
I'm kind of hoping with that midweek game that the ladies team, having played a few days earlier at Plough Lane with free tickets that we are told been high demand for, which is great to hear. I would love it if the ladies could get more than the B team trophy game. I'd be so happy, but we'll see. We'll try and I will be keeping an eye on that one. Definitely. Yeah. Anyway, right. On to results. So, 2-2 draw with Sheffield Wednesday last Saturday and then a midweek away win at Lincoln City, which we both correctly predicted, Stu. I thought it'd be 1-0. And you thought it'd be 1-0.
Yeah, I just had a feeling that...
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had Nick Zanev and Shay Alexander on Sunday Night Live and we were talking about clean sheets and clean sheets in terms of football and not sleeping.
Why did your brain go there? Wow.
I don't know. I just thought I had to clarify what we're talking about. But I don't know. I said from both of them how important a clean sheet was. We haven't been far away from it, really. If you think about the home game against Burton, it was a mistake, wasn't it? Apart from that, we haven't been far away from a clean sheet. So I'm glad it's done out of the way. We both predicted it correctly as we should.
Yeah, I felt the same as you. Again, people are going to say, probably sigh when I say this, law of averages, we had to keep a clean sheet at some point. And Lincoln away, I just felt, was a winnable game. They have two home games, Saturday and midweek. They'd won on the Saturday against Charlton. It's very rare, as I keep saying to people, that teams win those two games back to back. If you've got one at home and one away, then yes, that happens. And we'll talk about Plymouth doing that a bit later. But I thought when it's... Like we've had it in the past where we've won on the Saturday and we've thought we've had an easier game in the midweek. We'll get another win and 6 points. It never happens that way. It's just one of those strange things. You mentioned the Burton game, though, and how close we were getting a clean sheet. And it was a mistake that let them in for their goal from Anthony Hartigan. But I was thinking of the Burton game because the Sheffield Wednesday game was almost identical in the sense of, I don't think Burton were as much on top of us as Sheffield Wednesday were after an hour. I thought 25 minutes to go at 2-0 was looking like it was going to be a very boring 25 minutes because they were clearly on top and Nick Zanev had to make three good saves and they missed another good chance. But exactly the same as the Burton game, what happened is they retreated, couldn't keep possession, ball kept on coming back towards their goal. And eventually when that happens, you're gonna break at some point. And we got back into it, got the equaliser. And then exactly the same as the Burton game, as soon as we got the equaliser, all of a sudden, in the same way that Burton did, Sheffield Wednesday suddenly remembered how to play an attack and were suddenly creating chances again and getting players forward and could have stole it again at the end, much like Burton could have done it as well. So it's a funny old game. Yeah. I think perhaps, I must say, Sheffield Wednesday for that first 65 minutes... they are severely underperforming in this league at the moment because, I mean, is it? It's Barry Bannon for a start is just far too good for League One. It's ludicrous. It's Dele Bashiro, isn't it? No, number 17, centre midfield. I thought he was fantastic, especially the first half, in fairness to him. The two up top were a handful. Lee Gregory is an absolute handful. Patson is a handful. Do you know what? Berahino came on, and I was quite pleased with that because I don't know what's happened with that player, but blimey, let's like talk about Ravel Morrison-esque fall from grace. Anyway, no. Your thoughts on the performance?
I sort of said in our WhatsApp group, didn't I, that obviously the way we played, we it looked like we played a false nine. I don't think we played a forward, if I'm being honest with you. Jack Redoni sort of played the central side of it, but he wasn't really... They had three at the back who were just immense. They just looked bigger, stronger, everything, didn't they, really?
Yeah.
But I did say I felt if we could stay in the game until the 60th minute, where we were going to obviously make the substitutions, we'd be okay. The irony was is they scored the second as Presley and that. I was looking at body language of Presley and McCormick thinking they must have been obviously prepared to go right, 1-0 down, try and get it. And all of a sudden you're 2 down, you're thinking we're up against it. But the substitutions definitely made a difference. They were strong. I think what I was happier with is how we persevered. So Ayabusau kept going, Annie Hogan and Woodyard in midfield. I felt even though Sheffield Wednesday had better players individually, we still were compact enough. And the two, let's be fair, the penalty is a harsh penalty. It's definitely, Paul Canabai is definitely wrong side. He's not goal side, so I can sort of see that he has to, he dives like Swan Lake, doesn't he? And it's that side of it. But the substitutions made a massive difference. Presley was excellent. I thought Luke McCormick was excellent. I think I know we're going to come on to who's had the best week, but I think he's hands down, if I'm being truthful. I thought he was excellent for 20 minutes, and I thought he was excellent again at Lincoln. And they all made changes, didn't they? They all changed the game. I think Sheffield Wednesday definitely did drop off. It's that you see a lot of teams now, Ducky, and we see a lot of teams get into a 1-0 or 2-0 lead and they try and kill the game. They try and it's like this thing like, well, let's just slow the game down and do all the boring stuff. It's like everyone knows how to time waste now.
Yeah.
Not that no one did in the first place, but it was, wasn't it? Sheffield Wednesday, game dead, over. And you're spot on, you know. It took them to get back to 2-2 for them to realise actually that they could have gone and probably got the third.
Yeah. I mean, time wasting used to be a case of you get to the last 10 minutes and it would start with goalkeepers taking forever to take goal kicks, but now it seems to be starting. Like you say, as soon as the team takes the lead, especially away from home, it's like, right, shut up shop, don't give anything away. I'm just going to say at this juncture, because it's really irritating me, I don't know, listeners, if you can hear this drilling that is going on outside my flat right now. I don't think you shouldn't be able to because of my microphone, but if you are, I do apologise. It literally started the second we started recording, and yeah, it's really bugging me because it's constant. Anyway, talk about things being, consistently bugging people. Luke McCormick will consistently bug opposition defences, I think. I know you've mentioned him there and having a good week. Not only was it, I mean, for me, it's two assists against Sheffield Wednesday for me. He wins the penalty at Lincoln. Yeah. And the thing about McCormick is the goal that gets us back into it against Sheffield Wednesday, it's his run into the channel. Both times, in fact, for both goals. It's just making those runs into the channel. Defenders not sure how to pick him up, if they were picking him up, just made things happen. But the key point of when he got into those positions, because we didn't really, to be honest with you, there was an Asau chance from a corner where their defender misjudged the header and it sort of came to him and he wasn't quite set for it. There was the Asau chance when we won possession because we pressed up high and the defender made a mistake. And that, again, we didn't really create much. But then McCormick comes on, and it's two chances, and it's the quality of the final pass. And although for the first goal, it's Presley has the shot that's saved, it's still the fact that McCormick picked him out and had the composure to pick him out. And then the cross for the equaliser is just unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. You can tell why Chelsea wanted to have a sell on with him, because there's no doubt the ability he's got.
Yeah.
I think he struggled for whatever reason. He struggled You know, if you look at game time, he's only played 50% compared to some of the other minutes. But when he has been on, he's got goals, he's got assists. You know, he got a goal in the opening game of the season against Doncaster. He did score a goal against Pompey in the Football League Trophy. That cross but I think also if you think about the cross he put in for Radoni, very similar to what he put in for Ollie Palmer against Gillingham. I think Rob, I don't know if we've found the right position for him yet. I think he's better. I wish we could give him a free role, I'm being honest with you. Yeah. But I think Robbo wants to play in wide left, and you can see why, because he can come in, cut in with his right foot and the deliveries. Yeah, but I think we're crossing over in a couple of games. But Lincoln, he played a central behind Presley, and I think he's brilliant now. I really do. I think he can pick the ball up, he's direct, he's fast. We haven't seen the best of him yet. However, he's still been effective when you look at his goals and assists per minutes that he's actually played.
Yeah. I mean, that link-up is going to be important for us, isn't it? Because as it stands, Presley's going to have to start. Well, he's going to have to be playing every game from now on, really. I think it didn't work against Sheffield Wednesday without having that focal point up top. Mabude, I know you talked about we didn't really have a striker. We'd sort of rotated it. Mabude, Radoni, Asau. Mabude's not that player. So that those two, Presley up top, McCormick, free roll centrally behind, Radoni and Asau either side, I think that's what we're going to look at. And I think there's, as we've always said, there's obviously goals in this team. Pre-season seems a long time ago, but it's going to be a hard ask for him, isn't it? Because Presley's had a good week, took his penalty really, really well. Second penalty of the season for him. You mentioned earlier about wanting to avoid a replay because we don't need any more games in the fixture calendar, and it is hard. It's really hard for a young team to keep this up, isn't it? And especially Presley, who's going to be asked a lot of over the next, well, probably for the rest of the calendar year.
Yeah, and the problem is, in terms of, you know, Presley's 19, now what, 19, 20, McCormick 22, I think. Yeah, if you're asking a 19-year-old forward to play Saturday, Tuesday consistently the whole way through and not pick up any knocks, because, you know, the body's not used to that. That, you know, when he was playing at Brentford B didn't play Tuesday, Saturday, and they had a mixture of they played a lot of non, especially the season where he's got 20 odd goals, they played a lot of non-league teams because they couldn't travel abroad because of COVID. So he hasn't, they're all still learning, and I think that's been a problem with, you know, Asau and Radoni. Radoni hasn't played that many games when you look at it. Hasn't played as many games as we think. But again, you know, going on to Tuesday, hey, look, outstanding when you think about, you know, constant thorn in their side. But it is going to be difficult. I hope we can do something in the transfer window, the January window, not transfers, but probably loans. You know, do we look at bringing Corey Andrews back from Aldershot? You know, is that something that's going to be, he is a bigger player. We might have no choice but to bring him back in, simply because, as you say, we need those numbers, don't we? So we've got to get through until the window. But yeah, Robbo's got to keep the squad fresh. You know, he's changing around. People were questioning why Henry Lawrence wasn't starting against Sheffield Wednesday, but simply we've just got to manage this team through. But it's difficult, isn't it? If you think about the starting lineups, they're roughly our strongest teams.
Yeah,
roughly. It's the bench that isn't as strong as we probably need it. But you know, that was always going to be the case.
Was Lincoln our best performance of the season, though, as a whole performance?
Best first half. I think the wind. I was listening to the Lincoln commentary purely because I like to hear, because obviously, one, it's biased, you know, they're all biased, aren't they? But you get a bit to understand if they think the team is struggling or playing well or how they see the opposition, and they loved us. But they picked up very early, you know, we pressed so high against Lincoln. And they did say, the Lincoln commentary were saying that they like to play out from the back. We obviously spotted that. They did say that Michael Atherton doesn't like to change that. He's very rigid. But we were high press and an aggressive, is how aggressive the press was as well. You know, if you think about, I think there was one opportunity when we, well, the goal is where we pressed high, but we even pressed higher when we, I think we robbed their centre half in the area. Redoni robbed him, and that's you shouldn't have to, that shouldn't happen, but that was how aggressive we were. And then in behind that, you had Alex Richard, who was my man of the match by a mile again. He reminds me of a younger Danny Bullman. Now, everyone, of course, is younger than Danny Bullman because Danny Bullman's the oldest footballer in the history of the game. But what I mean by younger, he just reads the game. His experience, yeah. He reads the game so well. And everyone says he's everywhere, but he isn't. He's just where the ball is. But that's because he just tends to read very well the game in midfield.
Mm. We robbed the high press for the penalty. Was it a penalty?
No. No, okay. I thought it was a weak penalty. But as they say, it evens itself out, doesn't it? The week penalty against Sheffield Wednesday. It did chuckle me when people were saying how biased the referee was. He booked two of our players for time wasting in the first half. So he was hardly biased towards us. But yeah, I thought it was a weak penalty. Both penalties, I was disappointed the Sheffield Wednesday won. Being given against us, and I'd again been, as a Lincoln fan, I'd been gutted if that had been given against us.
The difference for me between the two penalties, I think they were both soft, but was the reactions of the players. We need to be a little bit more vocal in our opposition, because really the referee gave the penalty on Saturday, Sheffield Wednesday. Chris Sargentson, of course, that would be the only time I say his name today. And there was no real reaction. It was like, oh, okay. All right, it's a penalty. And we all just trotted back, took our positions on the edge of the 18-yard line. Bench weren't saying anything or protesting with the referee. You watch the Lincoln game back and their players are right straight in the face of the referee. Like, no way, what's happening? And that's just something. I mean, people say we don't like to see it. No, we don't like to see it. But sometimes, you know, if you're allowed to do it, you've got to play the game sometimes.
Yeah, Joel, it's weird because I actually missed the penalty incident live because my son was getting a bit agitated towards the second part of the second half. So I was literally just, I can't remember what I was doing, but I wasn't watching the game. I looked up and saw the penalty. But you're right, I saw the reaction of the players and I thought I must be a clear cut then, simply because I hadn't seen the actual live incident. I think we did mention it on Sunday Night Live, and I think Chad Alexander just said, well, you can't change it. I get that, but you still don't want to let... The referee's made a mistake, or you feel the referee's given a harsh penalty. You want to make sure, because referees psychologically have a habit of balancing these things up, don't they? If they think they get a dodgy decision, they have a psychologically somewhere along the line, you might get a dodgy decision late on.
So I know we
don't like people. It was supposed to, but believe it or not, I remember Robert telling me in the summer that there'd have been a new rule. They were going to be, sorry, my cat is just absurdly. There's going to be a new rule where apparently, you know, if you stood on the ball, you know, extend the ball to stop a free kick
or a referee,
there would be a stronger action for referees. There's still nothing, is there, really?
No.
The crowding and stuff like that. I get what you mean. But I think we just get on with it. I was actually disappointed Sanna didn't save it. I think he's very strong on penalties.
Mm.
He should have got better. He should have got closer to it.
Good penalty, maybe. Maybe just Gregory just waited for him to move, and then
good player. Yeah. Good player at that level.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I mean, they have got good players. Their squad should be performing much better. It is, but we'll say this about Ipswich as well, and we'll come on to Wigan's squad a bit later too. Word on the away fans. Just saying, it is great to have away fans. It makes such a difference having them. In an end where they can really generate some atmosphere, Kings Meadow didn't really give them that opportunity. So it does make the whole atmosphere. Our home fans were excellent as well, I thought. As the game wore on, after we'd gone behind and Sheffield Wednesday were beginning to dominate, obviously a home crowd gets a bit quieter, but I was just pleased we managed to get the equaliser to annoy the Sheffield Wednesday fans that had managed to get themselves tickets in the West Stand. So they would not.
Was there many at all in there? Then was there?
Well, there was a few in my row. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I think one of them was sat next to my dad, who I think had great pleasure in celebrating the equaliser to rub it in. It was quite obvious they were visiting Sheffield Wednesday fans in the home end. So oh, well, it is what it is. But, you know, good for the atmosphere. And then finally, best and worst. Oh, sorry. Before I even get onto that, talking about away fans, 369 for the trip to Lincoln, which I think is a fantastic effort. Well done to everyone that travelled. I would have loved to have gone. Obviously, getting time off from my job can be tricky to get to Lincoln and back, but that's a great effort. And hopefully we'll play Lincoln again in the near future. And I can actually tick Sinsel Bank off my list because I was gutted. I knew this was going to happen, though. I knew as soon as I was looking forward to Lincoln all season, the year that we went into the first lockdown and the season was curtailed. So, okay. And then no fans the following season. I just knew it was going to be a midweek and I wouldn't be able to go. But hey, what can you do? But anyway, best and worst week on the pitch. Best week, McCormick or Presley? Which one are you going to go for? McCormick. Or are you going to say Zanev? Okay.
McCormick. McCormick for me, just in terms of game, you know, assists, etc., game changing.
Okay. Worst week?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm trying to think.
I'm going to say someone. I don't know what happened to him midweek because he wasn't involved, but Mabude. And yeah, it's not just because he played for Watford, although it is.
It's Watford. You can't give him. You can't say he had a bad week just because he had a Watford. Well, because he's a Watford player.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Connor Smith had the worst week every single week.
Okay, we're going with Boudet, but I mean, it's obviously only because the Watford connection.
Do they get a new manager?
Watford, yeah. Most weeks, don't they?
They do every... yeah, but I mean, just this week gone. How did his first game go?
Not very good.
What happened?
They lost.
To who?
Was it 5-0? Was it, I don't know, 5-0.
5-0. God, that's embarrassing, isn't it? Just imagine.
That's what happens, though, doesn't it, in the Premiership. Do you know what I mean? Those scores are not really... not surprising anymore, are they? Do you know what I mean? It's such a difference between your top and sort of bottom teams. And Watford are a yo-yo team, aren't they?
They are a bottom-dwelling team. There is no doubt about that. And, of course, that wasn't the first 5-0 defeat they've had in the Premier League. For those of you that remember December 1999, with the famous 7-8-9-10-11-5-0 at Stalhurst Park.
Very quickly, before you move on, I was going to say to you, obviously, that was the debut game in the pub, i.e. for the screens were working at Plough Lane on Saturday.
Yeah, Watford were the first game shown on screens. Watford, I suppose, thank God they lost. Imagine if they'd won, it'd be horrendous.
So they we've got BT, and because my son was playing up at half-time, I went on the West End concourse, and they had Soccer Saturday on, which is great to be able to just see the scores coming in.
It is.
I know it sounds
like a proper football ground.
Yeah, and I know it's just a TV, isn't it? But yeah, it's finally working, and Plough Lane is taking shape, isn't it? Love it. I can't wait for home games.
No, and thankfully we have got another one on Saturday. I was about to say tomorrow, but it is tomorrow because we're recording on Friday. We're a bit late, and we're recording on Friday. It will be released on Friday, so it is tomorrow. I can actually say tomorrow. So good. Very quickly, Stu, because we're sort of running late.
But sounding great.
So I'm just going to run through what I picked out elsewhere in League One. And that was the fact that, like I said earlier, Plymouth 2-2 away at Oxford. I thought they were going to lose that because they've not lost since the opening day. I thought law of averages, but no. Great win at Oxford, 3-1. And then they beat Bolton in a game of water polo, 3-0 in the week with the most hilarious third goal, which you just have to laugh at. But bad week for Bolton. 4-0 defeat to Wigan on Saturday, 3-0 at Plymouth. I mean, it's a tough set of fixtures, but you don't want to go 4-0, 3-0 is harsh. Elsewhere, Charlton, bad week, lost at Lincoln. Can't remember what they did in the week, but Nigel Atkins sacked. So Charlton will be needing a new manager.
Yeah. Do you know what? I thought also Charlton had a good week as well.
I didn't think they were at the races, to be honest.
Why they would get Ashford against Atkinson, who then beat Charlton at their place. And then beat Morecambe 3-1. So they're doing really well, Cheltenham. You know, teams that come up, you know, when we look at it, they're sitting in 12th at the moment, 18 points, one above us. It's, you know, the teams that got promoted, it's only I'm trying to think who got promoted now. None of the teams got promoted in the bottom four, are they? Doncaster are doing their best to be rock bottom and be relegated by Christmas.
Oh, Hold on, listeners. Listeners are going to enjoy this as we try and struggle through which four teams actually did come up last season. So,
I know, I just
Cheltenham, Cambridge. It was Crewe. I'm sure it was Crewe. Who the hell was the fourth?
Were they last year?
Morecambe. Of course it's Morecambe. I don't think Crewe were there last year, were they?
Cambridge.
Cambridge. Morecambe. Cheltenham.
Yeah.
Crewe.
Did Crewe come up?
Oh, this is great radio for
everyone. I thought they were in our division last year.
Let me have a look.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm sure it is Crewe.
No, Bolton come up.
Oh, of course it did.
The problem is, because it was lockdown and no one went to games, it's so difficult sometimes to recall, isn't it? Because you didn't see them travel to Plough Lane. But yeah.
This is true. How could I forget that Bolton had gone down and came back up? Which means that Crewe actually finished... Shows you how much I know. Bloody hell. Crewe finished 12th last season. They were top half in League One last season. Well, there we go. Listeners, do you know what? I've had a mare there. You can remind me of that one. If you see me tomorrow, please do, at Plough Lane. Please remind me of that one. But also, if you do that, please remind Stu of Turf Mill. Wigan visit tomorrow. They are currently fourth, although they lost in the week. I was gutted they lost in the week for two reasons. One, because of who they lost to, and they are nameless, but they had a big awesome. I thought they'd follow that up with another win against Milton in a week, and then they would never win three in a row. They'd never win three in a week, so we'd get a chance. But now they've lost, I'm thinking, ugh, that's going to throw my predictions off. I might have to think, might even be a 0-0 draw I might go for. But anyway, it wouldn't be surprised me. They've kept six clean sheets out of 12 this season. They've only lost three games, but two of those were in their last four. Manager Liam Richardson, they had a real struggle in League One last season, but they've brought a whole new team in, basically. They've brought a whole new squad in on free transfers this time round. Amongst those, Charlie Wyke, as we will all be familiar with, James McLean from Stoke, Stephen Humphreys from Rochdale, Jack Watmore, Portsmouth centre-half. So they've got a strong squad, but even though they had a strong start, Stu, it does take time sometimes for these squads to bed in, and maybe they're having a little bit of a wobble in that regard over the past couple of weeks, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. You can't go through the whole season without having a bit of a wobble. But I think I looked at their away games, when they play away, they do tend to score goals. I'll tell you what I did notice, interestingly, is they scored in all their away games, five away games, they scored in all of them. And they've also been a team that scored first in all of them.
Mm-hmm. So, that's good.
Yeah. And you know, we don't like scoring first, do we?
I was going to say, I'm quite happy for Wigan to score first and actually be winning at half-time, because am I correct in saying this? Every time we've been behind at half-time at Plough Lane, we've not lost.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think, do you know what's really interesting? When you look at goals scored, if you're going to do your bet, don't look at anything before half-time. You know, 0-0, I reckon a goalless at half-time. But we score 90% of our goals in the second half, and we can score 69 of those in the second half.
Wow.
I love a bit of a stat. You know, in terms of we both scored five goals in the last 15 minutes in terms of effectively our home form and Wigan's away form. We've only conceded one goal at home in the last 15, and Wigan conceded none in the last 15. And I think our one would have been Gillingham, which wasn't technically a goal because we scored it.
Well, it wasn't technically a goal. I'm not sure that one would have. But we must do stats on points that we've won with goals in from the 85th minute onwards, because again, equaliser against Burton, equaliser against Sheffield Wednesday, winner at Morecambe. We've added up late goal against Oxford, but I think we must have picked up loads of points. Oxford didn't gain us any more points, but
if you go back as hard, if you look at the last half an hour, we scored out of our 20 goals, we scored 13 of them.
When you look back at the last half an hour of games, not the last half an hour of recording.
No, sorry, yes. In the last half an hour of games, 13 to 20 goals we scored in the last 30.
Wow.
Which probably is a reflection of our substitutions and our fitness.
And our fitness, yeah, massively. Fitness is a huge thing.
Our fitness levels are crazy. Because you, when you look at the high press that we do, it's very difficult to get that going for 90 minutes, and we can't. But we, and very few teams finish stronger than us.
Yeah.
So that's a credit, again, to the fitness levels of the team.
Elsewhere in League One this week, highlight for me, and which is a just an average fixture list, really, I've picked out Shrewsbury versus newly promoted Cambridge, who were promoted alongside Morecambe, Cheltenham and Bolton. What sort of numpty would say crew got promoted last season? Just to see how Shrewsbury get on, because Shrewsbury at home, I know that they beat us at home. Cambridge at home, they would think is a winnable game, and they need to pick up 3 points if they want to get themselves clear of relegation. So I'll just be interested. That was the game that I'm interested in seeing. Everything else, I don't know. Was there anything that really appealed to you?
I suppose when you look at it, Morecambe, Plymouth. Plymouth go to Morecambe. Morecambe had a decent start, haven't they, to the season?
Starting to struggle a little bit over the last few weeks.
Yeah, definitely. But it'd be interesting to see. Plymouth can't keep this form going the whole way through.
No.
Especially when you think about when they played us, they beat us 1-0, and we battered them first half. And since that game, they've just literally gone on a very, very good run. But I suppose, yeah, that same thing. Accrington, home to Pompey. Cowdy's under pressure already. That was always going to be the case, though, wasn't it? You know, when you think about it, I felt when he went to Pompey, Pompey want things to happen straight away.
Yeah.
Cowley's not that. Cowley's, you know, changed it from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. So maybe wrong manager, wrong club.
Could well be proved that way. Do you know, it's kind of similar in a way to Ipswich, similar-ish maybe. I know that they weren't happy with Kenny Jackett and not getting him up, but Ipswich had the same thing under Mick McCarthy and they were all desperate to get rid of him. And as soon as they did, look what's happened. So be careful what you wish for.
Well, Cardiff now.
Yeah, but you know, Welsh teams shouldn't even be in the English League, to be honest with you. Anyway, right. Last knockings then. We'll have a quick look at what happened 20 years ago this week. And before we get onto some very interesting football and club-related news, let's just get the singles and films and bits out of the way. The number one single on the 22nd of October, not the 2nd of October like my script says, needs two twos in 22. Number one single was Because I Got High by Afro Man, a song I had long forgotten about, but I think we should point out, Stu, that drugs are bad. Just say no. There's no hope with dope.
I agree. Can't say I have no more than that, mate.
There we go. Number one film was American Pie 2. that's film is what it is. It's got Alison Hannigan in it, though, who was in Buffy, so happy days. And How I Met Your Mother, so fan of hers. Talented actress she is. And then on the 23rd of October 2001, Apple released the iPod for the first time. Wow. And it was big, not only in terms of popularity, but the actual size of it. When you think back to what the first one was like with a little mobile phone screen and then a little wheel underneath it, yeah. And the white, the white packaging, which got dirty very quickly.
Yeah, I remember it very well, the Apple, when they released the iPod and the iPhones, because I remember saying to my mate who got one, I was like, it's never going to take on. And I was very much a little bit like, I didn't like following. I've always been like throughout my life.
Hold, really, Stu, hold on. I am going to stop you there. Are you about to say that you've never been one for following in the crowd or take it on? Is that where you were going with that?
Yeah, but not with Apple.
Okay, no. Let me stop you there. Have you ever queued up to get a new iPhone on the morning of its release?
I have. Yes, I have.
Have you done that once or more than once?
Oh, more than once. I would hate to think how many. But those were in my younger days when actually I could get up at that time in the morning and stuff. And I have also queued for FIFA at midnight. But do you know what? That only and the thing was, that only stopped because you could start downloading.
Of course. Game. So you didn't need
but
to.
I still downloaded it at midnight, of course, because that's when it was released. But no, with the Apple, I didn't want to follow it because I was like, no, it's never going to take on. But then I was the same with text messages. I was the same with WhatsApp. I was like, this is never going to take on. QR codes. Could not understand QR codes. What the hell do you want a QR code? I use them all the time now.
You know, I still don't use QR codes, I must admit, because especially now when you're in the pubs and they're like, oh, you can scan to get your order delivered to me. I'm thinking, that's just the height of laziness, isn't it? Really? You could easily just go up to the bar. No. But you know, I've got more of a Luddite as I've got older. You know this. I've gone completely anti-technology.
Do you know what? I went to Butlins for 4 days a couple of weeks ago, and they do table service. I loved it. Like, I could buy a round of drinks for free will, and I didn't have to go and get it.
See, this is a
little app. You say what table number you're on. What do you want? Do you want to add some, you know, do you want to add ice in it? And I was thinking to myself, do you know what? If this was out when I was younger, it would have been a lifesaver. But like, I probably would have spent a lot more money because it comes off your card, doesn't it?
This is the problem you just created. Yeah,
I was also thinking, right, if I was younger, I've gone off topic now. If I was younger, that would be a great, and you're single, could you imagine that would be a great way of buying a lady a drink? Because you could just get a table number, send her a drink, and then, you know, you're in.
This has been a fascinating insight into your mind and how your mind works.
It's so much easier for people nowadays to date. Like, you haven't even got to talk to anyone now. You just find a number and just text them. It's just like when I was younger, you had to do all the hard graft.
Anyway. You had to put the hours in. Do you know, this move to our service economy where we actually now have pubs that will deliver your drinks to you through a mobile phone app, so you don't actually have to speak to anyone or anything like this. And they wonder why we're struggling to attract HGV drivers. Why would you want to do that when everything else in life is just being handed to you? Yes, sir. I am scared for the future, and it's all technology's fault. Don't get me started on social media either. That rant we've had so many times.
Just make sure you get your stuff at Christmas in early.
I will do. But you know what I will do, Stuart? I'll be going to the shops and I'll be buying my Christmas presents and I'll buy them at the counter and I'll interact with the customers, person behind the till and all that business. Nothing's getting delivered to my household. No. That's not Christmas for me. I'll go and do it. Anyway, life was much simpler 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, on the pitch, bit of a rubbish week, lost 1-0 at home to Coventry at Soho's Park. 5,000 fans were there. I think David Thompson scored the winning goal, the former Liverpool. Yeah.
Yeah,
I've got memory of a bit of a long shot that seemed to bounce and skid off the end side of the bar or something like that. And then a few days later, we travelled to Millmore. And this is why modern life is rubbish, Stu, because Millmore is absolutely, as a football stadium, beats the pants off whatever the New York stadium. And it was a proper old school football ground, great terrace behind the goal, great atmosphere. Pitch was awful. Proper football, none of this manicured lawn that everyone plays on now, and these
manicured lawn.
They are manicured. They are just ridiculous. I was having this rant the other day, and I was having it in the summer, and we're going a little bit late, but about England, because England got to the final of Euro 2020, and people were sort of saying, and I was like, it's not one of the strongest English teams in my lifetime by any stretch of the imagination. And people sort of mocking me for this one. But do you know what, Stu? 20 years ago, when we were going to like Slovakia and Macedonia and places, and we were playing on these awful pitches and these hostile atmospheres, these big, and we're getting a win. That for me, do you know what the difference is? People can say about technically that players today, because you'd expect it with the amount of money that's thrown into their coaching and training and development, are technically stronger. But character is missing massively for me. Like, there's no character. You tell me this England team wouldn't go to that Slovakia game in Bratislava 20 years ago. You know, the one with the famous picture because it's got our flag as it's all kicking off in the stand.
Yeah.
With the police wading in on the England fans. Today's players wouldn't be able to cope with that. Like, no. Michael Owen, David Beckham, Ferdinand, Scholes, these players, they were so talented, but do you know what? They had actual character. And they could win games by themselves because they could take games like on their own and lead. Like Beckham against Greece, that's 20 years ago this month, where he dominated that game himself. Just don't have that anymore. What anyone?
You know what?
I'm not having it. Anyway.
Paul Scholes on BT Sports is hilarious with his punditry.
Yeah.
Man United, Atalanta in a week. And at half time, it was like, if this team was any decent, would this game be out of sight now? They're not very good, are they?
Nice.
Deadpan. Deadpan. At the end of the game, when they won it, he was still like, yeah, but it's not good enough.
Nice.
I don't know what makes you happy. Nothing makes you know like, him and Roy Keane in the change room must have been an absolute joy.
But they won things because they had high standards. This is the problem in society as general. We've got another societal rant here, but high standards. We're too accepting of things being all right or lower standard. No. You've got to set the highest expectations, the highest standards at all times. That's Paul Scholes and Roy Keane and David Beckham.
Just think about Millmore. That's still there, isn't it? It's not knocked down.
No, I visited it when we went last 2 years ago.
A little bit longer.
just a tad. It's still in situ. Yeah, it's all boarded up and stuff. They use it for like car parking and stuff like that.
I suppose I would say knock it down and build some houses, but they probably don't need it up there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And on that note, right, 25th of October 2001. Anyone from Yorkshire listening, you don't need houses. Just get you some tents on a field somewhere. 25th of October 2001 was the first public Don's Trust meeting. So as we were fighting the move to Milton Keynes and the trust movement was starting to take place, there were a number of trusts that had sprouted up in the country, but it was still early days in the movement. And we had a meeting at Wimbledon Community Centre to discuss how this would happen. I think from that point on, I think people were meeting every week.
Yeah.
In their various groups. We had supporters, direct representatives that came down to assist with that first public meeting, got the ball rolling before the big launch, and moved very, very quickly because went from the first public meeting in October to the launch meeting in February, I think the day after we beat Man City at Soho. So, yeah, momentous anniversary, which, if I've got my 25th is Monday, so tours of Plough Lane are going to, which are happening in the week, coinciding with that as well, which is quite nice. So yeah, anyway, bit of history for you.
Yeah, and our good friend Ray Armfield is doing the tour, isn't he?
He is.
So
he is. If you can get down to Plough Lane, by all means, do it.
Yeah, £3.
Yeah.
Should be good.
Mm-hmm. Happy days. So yeah. I threw in that line about Man City there because I hate Man City.
But then Newcastle would be the team that everyone's going to hate now anyway, so...
Yeah, should we do the list of hate again? I love doing my list of hate. So number one is joint first in my list of hate is franchise and Chelsea. Fuck me, I hate Chelsea so much. I fucking hate them. Do you know, 25 years ago this week when we beat them 4-2 at Stamford Bridge, and I still love about that is the fact that if you watch it back and you watch the full highlights, they're booing our black players. This is 96. Okoku and Gale are getting booed. And then Gale then sticks it through Leboeuf's legs and scores from 20 yards. And then Leboeuf makes a horrendous error and Okoku slams it in. And they can't take it. I hate Chelsea. Such a horrible football.
George Chelsea, I still remember, the funny thing is, I remember the cup game, the 2-2 game, when they put that temporary stand.
Yes, temporary stand, yeah.
That made Gillingham look, brilliant. And I still remember it was chucking it down with rain. And a person, I was on the end seat, and his person literally just stacked it.
Amazing.
Lost his foot. It went all the way down the stairs. So I still remember it now and laugh.
Do you know what I remember? Sorry, well off topic, and we are so late. Silly memories like that was Gravesend and Northfleet. I think they were still Gravesend at the time because they're now Ipswich, aren't they? And we played them, and big terrace behind the goal, but the catering van was at one end, was on one end of the terrace, and there was nothing else, so you had to go across. And obviously a group of guys had sent one of them to go and get everyone something to eat and a tea, freezing cold, dripping down with rain, carrying all these stuff like all by himself. He was never gonna make it. I could see him from like hundreds of yards away. Ridiculous. From like yards away, and I thought, I'm gonna have to go over there and give him a hand. But then by the time I'd made that decision, gone, teas had gone, because there was just no chance he was able to
just
carry
certain work. Things you do, you just don't do you?
Certain things you do, you just don't do.
You should do. Well, I don't know if you've seen the video that's been going around where the policeman, the overall penalty shootout, where the policeman, have you seen this video yet, where the policeman...
I haven't seen it, but I've heard
he basically edges towards the left of the goal.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone knows what's going to happen, and it does. Smacks him straight on the nut.
Amazing.
Hilarious. And you know it's going to happen. It's like in things... If you know it's going to happen, then do something about it. We say at King's Meadow, didn't we, when people used to walk behind the goal?
Oh, yeah.
Like, got the day when it zipped off and it knocked someone on the nut? You know it's going to happen, so why do it? You know? Yeah. But I just want to say, by the Gillingham and the Chelsea thing we were talking about, did you see in, I don't think it was it in Holland or somewhere in Europe where the stand actually fell?
Yeah,
I ain't going to Gillingham again. No, if that can fall, then anything can.
I can't believe that blooming thing in Gillingham has been there for nigh on 20 years now, actually. It was still a terrace the last time we went there in the football, in League One, in Division One, when it was still called Division One, before they rebranded it the Championship, as if that makes any sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been coming up 20 years that's been there. They haven't fixed that, but...
Do you reckon they've tightened the nuts up or anything like that at all?
I'm sure they've had their safety checks, but I thought, it's just amazing how temporary seating becomes not temporary. under some circumstances.
It's one of those grounds you go to and you look at it and you think, that don't look safe.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not looked safe for 20 years.
No. Very quickly, back to the list of hate. Third, Watford.
Only third?
Well, no, because franchise and Chelsea are joint first, then automatically they become third. Yeah, they do become third. Man City are up there. Newcastle are now up there. Yeah, basically anyone that's in the top six of the Premier League. Yeah, Bromley. Still hate Bromley.
Newcastle really disappointed me, you know. There was two things about Newcastle. One about Steve Bruce saying that he thinks that might be his last, you know, that his family had heard all the abuse. And do you know what? He's 1,000 games. That's a hell of an achievement. Mm-hmm. But then also the Newcastle forward. Is it Maximin or something? Who wrote a really touching tweet about how much Steve Bruce had helped. Players nowadays don't tend to stick their managers, do they? They just tend to, they're mercenaries, aren't they? Yeah. It was just so nice about he wouldn't forget how much he helped him and stuff like that. But yeah, Newcastle, do you know what? You've got to be careful. You've got your Newcastle back. You might not ever have it back. They've gone from like fans that will travel everywhere and you sort of go, oh, it'd be nice if they did well, to now going, yeah, I'm not going to like you too much now.
And you know what? I'm never watching Anton Deck's Saturday Night Takeaway ever again now. I've had it with them. Done. And you know what? If they win that bloody award they win every fucking year at that
no
stupid...
No one's against it, do they?
No more. Once you start advocating like human rights abusers, I think, no, sorry.
I would just say, Newcastle fans, just be careful. You start saying boo or you want the board out, just be careful because there might be 10,000 people less there the week after.
Yeah, never step into a Saudi Arabia embassy if you're ever abroad, but hey. Anyway, right. That's it. Enough politics for 1 week. Still hate Chelsea. Thank you for listening. Updates from the game with Wigan will be on our Twitter at 9YRSPodcast and Sunday Night Live as well on our YouTube channel. And Stu's blog is up as well. If you have a read of Stu's latest blog, links to that all on our social media. That is it, though. So, Stu, thank you very much for joining me this week.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening. Alexa Bliss, bag first milk, last 2 plus 2 equals 4. And we shall speak to you again next Friday.